I am here today to, you have to excuse my voice. I'm all the stress of everything that has happened. I'm kind of, it's attacked my immune system. A week ago today, our community decided a while back that we were going to protect Mother Earth. And not only our community, but the surrounding communities here in New Brunswick. We've had a number of supporters from all across New Brunswick come and help us. So a week ago, we decided we were going to go and confront and stop the thumper trucks that are on the Highway 126 here in Kent County. We went up to Westmoreland County, which is connecting our two counties together. And when we got there, it was just this vision of driving up there and seeing all of the those geophones and all of this equipment that the SWN has put out on our land was quite emotional. It was I really felt for Mother Earth at that time, because I knew what they were going to do to her. And after doing a lot of research and everything and seeing what these machines are going to do, it was quite it's really, really hard to explain, except maybe if you're a parent and you see your child laying there sick with the cold or with a toothache, they're cutting their first tooth, the pain that that child is feeling, there's not a whole lot you can do. And to me, that was kind of the pain that I was seeing. There wasn't a whole lot we could do except for try and stop those trucks. As Mi'kmaq women, we've been given the gift to protect the water, the responsibility to protect the water, to protect the earth. We do that because we carry the water in us. When we carry our children, we have that water in us. That water is to protect our generations, our future generations. And it's our responsibility to take care of that. So when the gathering began on Tuesday, it just ended up being that I wasn't the one that was there. My body was there, but the spirits pretty well took over as to what I was going to do that day. And so we did begin marching towards the trucks, and once the drums started, that's when our ceremony started, when those drums started to beat as we walked down that highway. And the one thing that they don't understand is the RCMP and SWN and whoever else was in charge that day, they don't understand that our ceremonies don't end until the spirits tell us this ceremony has ended. We were there for a number of hours, and the drums continued to beat the whole time we were there. I recall somebody saying that we had to be at least 50, I think it was 50 feet or 50 yards away from the truck. So what I did was I started drumming, and I started walking away from the truck. and this drum here and the staff that's in front of us. I was holding those and I was walking away and I was drumming and then I stopped. I was told I have to do a four direction before I end this song. The four directions is to honor the spirits that came to help us and to protect us that day, to give us the strength. So that's what I started to do. I wasn't resisting anything. I wasn't going against their wishes because I was walking away. I just stopped momentarily to do what the spirits had asked me to do and what my responsibility was. I started to do the four directions. I got two directions done. I started to do the third. And I was faced with a wall. RCMP officer. I still don't know what the man looks like. And when I tried to walk past him to finish the song, to finish the other two directions, he stopped me again. He stood right in front of me. I was attempting to walk away from the trucks as they asked us. He stopped me and he started yelling. I continued to pray because the song, the ceremony was not over. So I continued to pray. I continued to sing. And all I remember is feeling his hand completely engulf the top of my head and push me down and said, "Arrest this one." And after that, it was just a matter of hands coming at me, and I was completely surrounded. I was in mid-honor beat, and the honor beats is what we use to give recognition and honor to the four directions and the spirits that stand there. I was in mid-honor beat. My drum was in the air. My hand was in the air. My drumstick was ready to hit the drum, and the officer grabbed the stick and literally twisted it out of my hand. I think that was part of the beginning of the injuries that had occurred to my hand. There was a struggle with that because I was not going to let my drum go. They managed to get the drumstick really easy because I already had an injury to this hand. But I had the drum and the eagle staff in this hand, and when I knew they were going to start grabbing at it, I did what I thought was right, and I protected it. I went down on one knee, and I brought it close to my heart, and I started praying. And I was asking for protection for these sacred items. I felt a number of officers, and you know, there was a lot of yelling and everything. I felt a lot of hands grabbing at me. And what I ended up having, they grabbed me and lifted me up. When I was lifted up in the air, I looked up and my daughter was in front of me. And I knew I could hand it over. But they would only let her take the eagle staff. They wouldn't let her take the drum. So as soon as she got a hold of the eagle staff, they made a wall and they separated us. They wouldn't allow her to come anywhere near me again, and I wasn't allowed to go anywhere near her. And then they started pushing me towards the paddy wagon, and when they got me to the paddy wagon, they made another wall to stop anybody from trying to get anywhere near me or anything. And then again, they tried pushing me into the paddy wagon. While they were trying to do all of this stuff, I had one officer on this side of me, and he had a hold of my hand, and he kept grabbing it and twisting it and everything. And I had already told them almost right from the beginning, don't touch that arm. I have a previous injury. I even stated to them that I'm scheduled to see a surgeon on the 17th. Of this month, and to be careful with it. It was just as if I didn't even tell them anything. I even had a paint patch on this wrist. And when the officer grabbed my hand, it kind of peeled off, and I told him, you know, that's, you know, my pain. He just ripped it off and just it landed on the floor, on the ground, whatever. But it was just a constant, and the more I pleaded for them not to hurt that hand, it seemed the more He tried to hurt it. As I'm standing there, he's continued twisting it, and I just got really upset, and I turned around and I yelled at him, and I swore at him, not like, you know, directly at him, but I swore, and I told him to go ahead and break it. You know, if you're going to do that much damage, then just go ahead and break it. And he just kind of looked at me, and it's, you know, eased up a little bit, but not a whole lot. And I was, while this is all going on, I'm fighting with another officer on this side, trying to take my drum from me. And I wasn't going to allow them to take my drum. They tried to put me in the paddy wagon. I was not going to allow my drum to get locked up. My drum does not belong in a cage, and neither do I for what I was doing. My drum was not going to go in that cage with me. I stopped them from putting me in, and he kept saying, you know, we're going to charge you with obstruction or something. And I just yelled at him. I said, I'm not going, my drum is not going in there. I will go in there, but my drum is not going in there. And finally, he got really upset at another officer and yelled at him and told him to go and get my daughter, because he knew I would not give my drum up to anyone other than her. So he yelled at the other officer to go get my daughter so we can get rid of this damn drum. And that was pretty disheartening. But then I knew as soon as I let go of this drum that was it. You know, they had me. So I stood there for a minute. My daughter was there with me. And I knew as soon as I let go of the drum, then that was it. So I looked at my daughter straight in the eye and I told her, I said, I love you. And she said, you're going to let go, Mom? And I said, yeah. So as soon as I let go, that's when the officer on this side twisted my arm back. The officer on this side was already in the process of putting the plastic cuffs on this hand. And they had me then, and then they just took both of my hands and twisted it back. As soon as my hands went behind me, I felt this shoulder pop. And there wasn't really a whole lot I could do. My hand wasn't hurting, my shoulder was. And as they're pushing me into the paddy wagon, I feel that the cuffs tighten. And then that's when the pain started. This part is like the worst of anything, is because they locked me in this cage and left me in this cage screaming and crying for at least 20 minutes, maybe half an hour. And I was in so much pain, I couldn't even take a breath. Every time I tried to take a breath, it felt like those handcuffs were ripping my hand open. And I started yelling, and they wouldn't listen to me, and I started kicking the cage, trying to get their attention. I thought maybe they couldn't hear me, and then I noticed there's a window where the driver could hear me. So I just kept yelling and yelling, and I couldn't get, they wouldn't stop. And finally, the driver pulled over. He got out, he talked with like three or four different officers, jumped back in the car and drove down the road some more, not even asking me what was wrong, if I was okay, nothing. And I just kept yelling at them to take the cuffs off. I was in pain. And that my arm, because of the previous injury. And I just kept yelling and yelling, and nobody was listening to me. And finally, they did stop. And the officer, he came and he He said, okay. He says, what's wrong? And I said, the cuffs are too tight. I said, something's wrong. It's really hurting. He said, okay, we'll see what we can do. And he just shut the door and drove down the road again a little ways. It wasn't until after that somebody actually recorded it. I didn't know this. And that was really hard to hear. You couldn't see me, but you could hear me. And they finally decided they were going to take the plastic cuffs off. When they opened the door and they were starting to get ready, other people were coming back to where their cars were. And my daughter was there. She heard me. She came running to the paddy wagon, and she started yelling at them, you know, take them off. And they said, well, we can't do anything because they're coming down the road. The officer told her, if you stop them from coming down here, then we can take the cuffs off. So she ran up and yelled at them, you know, stop, you know, they're hurting my mom. If you guys keep going, she's going to be in more pain. And I could hear her yelling at the people, and they did stop. And it was another officer that just came along and said, no, we can't do that. You can't do that. They have to keep going. And there was a lot of people. And I had to sit there in pain, screaming and crying, while all these people walked by. I don't even know how, but one of the elder women here managed to get through all of the officers and came and asked me, are you all right, Lorraine? I was like, no, I'm in pain. I need an ambulance. And so I was yelling at them prior to that I need an ambulance, and I wasn't getting any response from any of the police officers. And they finally, all the people walked by, and they tried cutting it off with a knife before this, and they just caused more pain. And they end up coming in with these really ridiculous Swiss Army knife thing, and with this tiny little metal cutter on it, and dug it in there, and of course caused more pain. But afterwards, I kept telling them I need an ambulance, and I wasn't getting any response, and they continued to question me as to what my name was, where, you know, everything else, and I wasn't giving them any information until I knew that I was going to receive medical care. So I didn't want to be thrown in jail knowing the pain I was in. I've had this injury, this, you know, problem with my hand for years. I know what, you know, when something is definitely wrong. And I did not want to sit in a jail cell being in that much pain. So I wasn't going to give up my information until I knew an ambulance was coming. So they may take that as resisting or whatever, but or not complying, but I was looking out for my own safety. I was looking out for my own rights, my own human rights. And being locked in there was, you know, was bad enough. Like I probably could have taken that, being locked in that cage. You know, that wouldn't have probably bothered me. But being locked in there and being in that much pain, and then just being disregarded as, you know, I didn't have any rights. I didn't have anything when they picked me up and threw me in that cage. And basically, that's what they're doing to our mother. You know, that's why we're here. You know, to them, she doesn't have any rights. To them, they're going to do whatever they want to do. SWN is going to do whatever they want to do to our mother, because in their eyes, she has no rights. We have rights as First Nations to protect her and to have her with us and to protect us, provide for us. But they don't see that, and it's time that they do. It is our mother but it belongs to everybody. We all live here. All nations live on this earth. All nations drink the water. All nations need this water to survive. That's why we're here. We want to protect this. We want to make sure that it's going to be here for generations to come. We're not looking at just tomorrow. We're looking at 7 generations down the road. And even farther than that, we don't want our mother to be hurting anymore. We see what's going on up in Alberta. And my heart breaks for those people up there and for Mother Earth for what they're doing to her up there. It's deplorable what they're doing. The Creator put that stuff on the earth. And He put it far, far into the earth for a reason. He put that shale gas way, way down there for a reason. Not so that we can go and dig down into our mother and take it out. That was not why that was put there. The Creator put that there for a reason. There's good and there's bad in our world. There has to be a balance. And they're breaking that balance. Taking that tar sands out of that land is breaking that balance. And now they're coming to our territory. And they're wanting to dig into our mother on this side. They want to break the balance here too. We're not going to allow it. We will stand united. We will stand proud Mi'kmaq women. And we will do what we need to do. I don't care if you break the other hand. I will be there. And I will stop you. My ancestors are behind me. That flag carries our ancestors' history, our ancestors' blood. And we will stop you. It really angers me. It really hurts me knowing that they can come in here and do whatever they want. But we're not going to allow it. Right now, there's a room full of people here behind these cameras, and they are ready. And they're not going to allow it either. And I'm asking right now from all of my brothers and sisters across this country, if you can't come and stand with us, then light the fire. Light the fire for our mother. And pray with us. Offer the tobacco. We stopped that truck with tobacco that last week. My sister took the tobacco and put it on top of that truck. And our ancestors came and stopped that truck from moving. Our prayers are strong. We just need you guys. We need our brothers and sisters to come here and pray with us. If you can't be here with us, then please light the fires. Get the prayers. Get your communities to come together. There's all kinds of powwows that are happening every weekend. Please, when you light your fire for your powwow this weekend, remember us. Remember our mother. And make sure the prayers that go into that fire are for her this weekend. Thank you.
All right. Well, my name is Suzanne Petlis, and my father is from New Brunswick. So I have roots here that they like to call it... which is Skalie, which means I sprouted from, you know, Mi'kma'ki, which means I reside everywhere. I have family in both in Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. But I received a message from their warrior chief out here that they're requiring assistance after Lorraine was arrested. So I showed up shortly after. I think it was the day after Lorraine was arrested. I showed up, and. You know, we gathered and we were talking about the issues that were going on, the different types of support that they were getting from outside of the community, and you know, who was on board, and they explained the 28 groups that were coming together to join against the fight against fracking. And the reason why I'm so convicted in coming out here and to help out is because it's my sacred obligation as a only a woman to speak for the water and to pray for that water and to protect that water. It's my role as an Aboriginal woman, and it's been the role since time immemorial. Mm-hmm. So it's our Aboriginal right, and it is also our it's our human right to be able to participate in ceremony, even under the United Nations Declaration for Human Rights. Article 18 states that any person could, you know, participate in their religious freedom. I don't have it quote for quote, but you're supposed to have that religious freedom. Also, within our own treaties that we signed with the Crown, it said that we should not be molested while we are there by His Majesty's subjects or their dependents in the exercise of our religion. Basically, the RCMP, according to Old English, molested us while we were practicing our sacred ceremonies. That's not only a violation of our human rights, it's a violation of our Aboriginal rights. And it's a shame that they don't let us finish off our four directions. Each and every time we try to do it, I don't know what's so scary about our ceremonies. It feels like we're back in the 1950s when our ceremonies were banned. You know, it really I feel the pain that my grandparents felt when they weren't allowed to sing, when they weren't allowed to dance. And with the whole Idle No More movement, it was celebrating that, you know, that we're finally allowed to pray and we're finally allowed to sing and celebrate who we are. And everything that is happening out here, it's wrong, because they're prosecuting us. They're criminalizing our prayers. They're criminalizing to be Ulnu. They're criminalizing. We cannot be who we are. It's becoming a crime to be who we are. They're saying I committed mischief for laying tobacco down and praying after the police officers asked me to stay on this side of them. I did. I made the line and I made the circle, and I was just going to do my prayer and leave. That was my plan and intention, just to lay my tobacco down. And I was just starting on my one direction, and I was just about to lift my tobacco up to Creator, and they continued to arrest me. I still had the tobacco in my hand. I demanded that they let me lay the tobacco down, and they allowed it, but it wasn't that easy to try to get them to do that. They continued to proceed to put me into the sheriff's van. They transferred me from several vehicles at a time. They placed Lorraine in plastic cuffs. They placed me in real handcuffs. And then they proceeded to take me to the station. After several hours there, they finally started to interrogate me. And, you know, it made me feel like a hard-up criminal, you know. I've never been charged for anything in my life. I've been a law-abiding citizen, both to my traditional laws and both to, you know, their Canadian laws because of the treaties. You know, we agreed to live and coexist in peace and friendship. And prior to me conducting my ceremony, when the police officers asked me to stay on the other side of them, I offered each and every one of them tobacco. Some of them refused. That's okay. That's Creator will take care of them. But they, you know, it was already a slap in the face when they refused. But it was even it dehumanized me, and it really made me feel like, you know, like, what has this world come to when you cannot pray and be in ceremony and you're criminalized? You know, this, it's not right. What has this world come to? I feel like I'm living in a dictatorship society where, you know, all hail Stephen Harper, who's going to say, you know, throw these Indians in jail for praying and laying their tobacco. You know, what's so scary about that? Why are they so scared of our ceremonies? Maybe it's because they're so powerful. But, you know, we're praying for the water and we're praying for the earth. And we want our future generations, we want our grandchildren and our children to be able to live in a world where they feel safe and content with drinking the water and not having to be able to be poisoned. Because we have brothers and sisters everywhere who are being poisoned right now as we speak. Even within our own region and area of Mi'kmaq, they're being poisoned. Their water is being poisoned, and it feels... Not only does it feel like I was a political prisoner of war, but it feels like we're this whole eco genocide. It feels like everybody is being targeted. You know, it's not only First Nations people, but it feels like all of Canada is being exploited for all of the resources. You know, if there's no people, then they'll be able to take all of the resources for the money. And, you know, you can't, there's a prophecy out west that it says when the last tree has been chopped down and the last fish has been caught, then they'll realize that they can't eat money. So, and that's, we don't want to get to that point. The other prophecy that's out west is they said that someday water is going to be worth more than gold if we don't change our ways. And the big word in there is if. So what we're doing is we're trying to abolish that if in there. We want to change our ways. You know, we don't want to head down that path of destruction because we know it's coming. We know the dangers of this. The fracking has caused so much destruction to the water that there's water tanks being held out in Debert, and they can't do anything about this water because it's poisoned and it's polluted. And once you poison and pollute water, there's nothing you could do to bring it back to life because water is sacred and it's a living thing. And how can you poison something that's responsible for all of life throughout the world?